You're listening to the podcast, The E at the End is Silent. This is a podcast about creators, where we interview our favorite authors, game programmers, musicians, makers, streamers, and artists of all kinds. Call us at 856-67-SULLY, that is 856-677-8559. Your question may be used in a later episode.
Hey, podcast listeners, what you're about to hear is an interview with GGG Man Lives from YouTube. Easily my brother, my favorite FPS reviewer on YouTube. We hit the ground running on this interview, as you'll hear. We just, no time for introductions. We just roll right into the talking. So we'll have links to his YouTube and Twitter channels in the show notes. All right, here's the interview.
Yeah, can you hear me right?
I can hear you.
Oh my gosh.
All right.
Yeah,
cool.
This is awesome. All right.
Wow. I'm just going to shut down Steam and all that kind of stuff because my internet is pretty terrible. So I'm just going to try and minimize any bandwidth hogging that I can.
Yeah, I've got a couple of friends down under, and your internet is just phenomenally bad.
Yeah, it's pretty atrocious. Discord awesome. Always seems to be pretty bad too, so I'm just going to close that down.
Well, hey, thank you so much for letting us interview you here. Obviously, we're not as established as you are. So, by the way, I'm... but, you know, we do little nicknames. So it's Gun Sully and my brother with the nice mic.
And the almost identical voice is Tech Sully.
Okay.
Even our mom can't tell us apart, so don't worry. There's no quiz on who's who. I mean, basically, if you have a tech question or a video game question, I'm usually the one that's either asking it or questioning about it. And
yeah. And,
yeah, right.
I'm more into, like, social stuff and, like, the news commentary side of things and that. Mm. So he's the tech guy.
All the soul-crushing stuff.
Yes.
Right. It's,
that's what I'm into. Oh, my gosh. This is just very exciting. I just got to say, I love your videos. I was the one who first reached out to you and let you know that you got me into Gretzo 2.
I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing.
You know, it's one of the, I'm a very sensitive person, and it helped me kind of put myself in a free speech world where I had to confront kind of the dumbest, goofiest, most exaggerated version of evil, you know, and realize that it really doesn't hurt me, and it just sort of lets you live in this crazy world, and just blow off some steam and sort of see how you feel. And I think, you know, when you play goofy stuff like that or Postal, it kind of lets you sort of see how you actually feel about stuff. If you never confront any of the goofy, non-politically correct, crazy stuff, you really don't know how you feel about that stuff, you know? So I like playing those things. And when I get offended, I'm like, okay, I'm a human. You know?
I think that the discerning factor is that, like, you can tell that stuff's just been made to be as dumb as possible. Like, there are offensive games that have been made seriously, like there's that ethnic cleansing game, which is made by some, like, white supremacist group apparently in America, and it's about going around killing, like, black people and Jewish people. And it's like, you can just tell it's made with, like, malice. Like, it's not made to be funny. It's just like they really, you know, hate the groups kind of thing, so they're just doing this as kind of like a piece for them. And that's the massive, you know, kind of separation, I think.
And it's so cringy, too. I saw your videos on the controversial games, and it's so cringy that they take themselves that seriously, you know?
Yeah.
They
actually believe in that silly stuff. I got to say, Doom, we are so on the same page with Doom and Reuben sandwiches.
I've actually gone off the Rubens, too, to be honest. Like, I haven't had them in ages because the place that used to make them near my house closed down. And so I haven't really had them for maybe, I don't know, maybe like a year and a bit now. And I think it, like, reflects because I haven't really said it much in videos anymore because it's not, like, always on my mind. You know what I mean? It's not, like, pertinent in the back of my head. So it's, like, yeah, it's almost like a thing of the past. I think the fans say it more than I do now, to be honest.
But, I forgot. There's one last thing I want to say about the controversial games. I wanted to thank you. Like I said, I'm a very sensitive person, and I wanted to just thank you so much for actually giving an objective view not just of those crazy games, but of the gameplay of them, which I thought was really clever, really smart. And you actually broke down how crummy the gameplay is on those games. And of course, nobody else would do that. Nobody else would. Everybody else would just go, "That's bad." They talk about bad stuff. It's made by bad people. You were actually the gameplay is crummy, and I thought that.
Yeah, actually, that's brilliant. Let me jump in here. I mean, that's what I've liked about your videos. Where this is Tech Sully, by the way. Seeing your videos where you'll go back and be like, "Hey, originally I didn't like this. Now it's grown on me," or I've played through and I like it. After this, and so that's been kind of reassuring, because like in America right now, I mean, if anybody ever says, "Oh, I was wrong on this," they get flayed in the media. Mm. Politicians. Musicians, anybody that ever says, "Oh, I've changed my mind on this," that's poison in America. I have no idea why.
Yeah, I've done that a couple of times where I've talked about like another game entirely, and then in that video I might say compare it to an old thing, and because I've got like a fresh perspective on it, I say, "Oh yeah, it's just like this, and this is really good," and people have like called me out, and I've had to like almost take that stance and be like, "Well, I might have talked about that 4 or 5 years ago," and yeah, time's just, your opinion changes over time naturally, but it's a double-edged sword, because over Christmas, I went back and played all these old games that I haven't played for a while, not old games, but things from like mid-2000s, and like I hated a lot of these old games. Like I went back and played it, like I played Doom 3 again, and I remember really loving that game, and I went back to play it, and I'm just like, man, this is really bad. Oh. Like I don't know why I loved it so much back then, but I'm playing it now, and I just don't like the fact that everything's so dark.
Hey, honey,
and
Mike, if you're going to be yelling at people in your room, sorry. Although I got to ask you, so if any game needs a modern remake, needs to be brought in the modern era, which one is it, and why is it No One Lives Forever?
I'd be happy if they just gave that like a HD remaster. Do you know what I mean? Like if it was just given that kind of repackage. Like what they've been doing with like Turok 2, and Night Dive Studios have done that to a bunch of cool games. Honestly, I think the game that needs a revival is the Duke Nukem 3D. I think he really kind of needs to come back. Or remember Blood, like that other FPS game that I don't think 3D Realms did. I think it was Monolith Productions. But that is just kind of like people who know about that game, I don't think you'd find anyone who could say a bad thing about it. It's just, and especially in this day and age where we love kind of gore in our video games, like over-the-top gore, I think that game would just be like really well-received if they could like repackage it, and release it and just kind of get it out to modern audiences. Because we're at that point now where we're getting like a pretty cool renaissance of FPS games. You know what I mean? Like there's all these indie games that are coming out, and they're very much aimed at guys like me who used to play those old kind of 90s FPS games, and we're just getting sick of the sort of Call of Duties and that kind of stuff. It's just getting a bit old. So, yeah, bring back Duke. That's what I'd say. That's the slogan.
Yeah, I like it. It definitely could fit well with the modern engines and it bumping up in the graphics. Speaking of talking about games, Kickstarter stuff, early access stuff, I don't have much time. I only get to play about 2 hours of video games a week anymore. I got kids, I got a job, I got all this stuff. I don't have time for early access. And so I like guys like you that, play them, and then I can see, hey, this is worth my time to jump in, So what are your thoughts on like the early access, the Kickstarter kind of things? I mean, is that the future, or is that inevitable?
I think it's a good platform for indie developers if it's put in the right hands, people who are going to kind of see it to completion. Like talking about Dusk again, I mean, Dusk is a game that I think it's kind of had to go into early access out of necessity, because I mean, it's, the team working on that is literally, I think, three dudes. You've got Dave Oshry, who's like the producer or whatever, I don't know what his proper title is, marketing, all that kind of stuff. Dave Szymanski, who's just developing everything, doing the level design, the coding, and then Andrew Holschult does the music. You've got three dudes, like that's just, you can't just kind of sustain that in your spare time and still make it like a viable end product. So I think they've had to kind of adopt that early access model, but it's sort of coming to fruition now, because recent example was Subnautica came out a few days ago, and that had been in early access for like 2 years, but it's came out and it's like amazing. It's honestly like one of the best games I think I've played, survival games I've played recently. So I think it just depends on the developers that are, the developers are behind it. It obviously hasn't worked out in the past. Like I've lost count of the amount of crappy early access games that I've done videos on, almost to the point where I almost don't do those videos anymore because nothing ever really kind of comes of them. So in the sense of like the game never really goes anywhere. And there's always hype surrounding them at the time, and that may be the case, but it's not going to be indicative of what's going to happen like 2 years down the track. So I think the bottom line is it just depends on who's doing it. But for indie developers, like sometimes it's the only way they seem to be able to get a game made. So it's a good thing for them.
Yeah, it cracks the door open and they can try to walk through it. I gotcha.
Sure, yeah.
Talking about the HD remakes, all right, so you play primarily on PC or do you play on consoles at all?
I mean, I'm a PC guy most of the time. I've got all the consoles. Actually, well, I don't have an Xbox One, but I've got PS4, PS3, 360, all that kind of stuff. I think I just tend to do PC stuff because I work on the computer a lot for like my sort of proper job, I guess, which is video editing. So I'm on it all the time anyway, and it's just it's an easy platform for capturing footage. Like it's Shadowplay has just made that process so simple versus, you know, capture cards for consoles, which are just a pain in the ass. So yeah.
Yeah, I was going to ask you a little about your methods, your style. So I notice. So are you reading off a script or off of like cue pointers as you're going over the video, or like are you looking at a video of your play as you're doing your voiceover? What's your methodology on that?
Yeah, it's a good question. I've almost made a video on this so many times because I get asked it a fair bit from other people, but. Basically, like, the game comes first, so, I mean, I kind of figure out what game I want to play, and I'll play through that, obviously. And I don't capture the whole game, like, I'll just capture small segments, so you know what I mean? So I might capture a minute or two of gameplay, and then when I go back to the footage, I'll name that gameplay on what it's about, if that makes sense. So if it's, like, let's talk about Grezzo. If it's something in Grezzo where it's, like, I'm going around with, like, a flamethrower killing grannies with the treadmills or whatever they're using. Like, it'll be, you know, Grezzo 2 killing grannies with a flamethrower .mp4, whatever it is. So then when I'm writing up the script and I'm editing, like, all the clips are sort of related to what the content is so I can match it up. And, yeah, I mean, I think a script is pretty important because I've found that when I try to do stream of thought videos, like even like announcement videos, which I've done in the past, like I suck at talking off the cuff. I can talk now, obviously, because it's like, you know, we're kind of, you know, I guess spitballing about stuff, but coming up with like good points, you know what I mean, that relate to the video, relate yeah. to the game is pretty hard off the cuff, man. So, yeah, and then I just, you know, just kind of record the script and edit all together. And then, yeah, that's pretty much it. And I guess time spent just depends on what type of game it is, you know, in the end.
That's cool. So when you're playing FPSs, there's such a focus on the multiplayer, and the internet that you're given there down under is brutal, to say the least. Do you find the best your best experiences if there's you know, national servers, you know, something that's at least not having to go across those wires?
Oh, massively. And it's, you know, it's really telling because you can really tell the difference between a game that's got good, it's obviously got dedicated servers and has good kind of, you know, support from the devs versus one that they just don't give a shit about us. I mean, classic example is those Call of Duty games. I was going to do a rant video on this, but like, again, like rant videos aren't really my thing, so I kind of pussied out of it. But like, that's been a game series where like you just get shafted in that game if you live in Australia, it seems. Like, I think maybe Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 was the last game I played in that series where it ran well. Like, I didn't have disconnections, I didn't have really bad, you know, lag spikes, rubber banding, that kind of stuff. But then you'll play something like Titanfall 2 came out, and the multiplayer for that was like amazing. Like, it was so stable. And you'll go play Counter-Strike Source or something, and you know, it runs perfectly. But it's more dependent, again, on the game, I think, as well. Like, you don't notice it in certain games. Like, I played Overwatch for a while, and I never really had issues in that. But just seems certain developers just really don't care about, you know, I guess, Aussie servers. And then over time, the support just disappears, so it becomes even worse. But we're actually getting broadband internet next month, which we were supposed to get in 2016. So come 2 or 3 months from now, I'll actually be on some pretty decent internet. I'm actually pretty excited about it.
Yeah, that's
cool. Honest.
Yeah.
I know it's sad to say that, but you know, everyone else has got good net, but yeah, we're a bit behind the times in Australia.
Well, if you saw the part of America I'm in, it's amazing. I can get any kind of internet out here too, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, we live in different cities. I should mention that too. He's Tech is in his bunker in Central Virginia, and I'm in a small town that also gets some bad reception called Washington, D.C.
Oh, right. Did they have bad internet there?
You know, it's really weird. It just sort of depends on where you live. It's building by building. And some favor Comcast, some favor Xfinity, Verizon. And my building favors Verizon, but we have Xfinity. So I'm not saying Verizon does some shenanigans sometimes, but yeah, sometimes it feels like we lose our internet a little more than other people do.
Yeah, right. That's surprising. I thought it was just good. Like, I mean, I know you'd have remote areas where the internet's not that great, but I thought in sort of major cities, you guys would have pretty good internet connections.
Well, in DC, one of the things you have too is we live right across one of the military installations, and you are never more than 5 miles away from a military installation which has SATCOM working constantly, and your cell phone will cut out when you're going down certain roads, just in downtown D.C. because of all the SATCOM traffic. So there's some weird technical issues that I have here. But hearing you guys talk about Australia, it just reminds me of hearing PewDiePie talk about the issue of net neutrality. And he was explaining to, you know, because most of the people watching are in America, and they're wanting him to do a video on it. And he's like, I don't live in America. I already have bad internet.
I've kind of because I'm a pretty apolitical dude, so I've kind of just avoided the net neutrality conversation because it's something that I don't really know too much about it, so I don't think I'm really right to comment on it.
Even our politicians who are making a political issue aren't getting it right. One of my guys sponsored the bill, which I'm like he in his thing, it's making my head hurt because he's completely not understanding what he's describing, and I'm like, good Lord, he's my district's guy, so
aggravation too is whether you were for net neutrality or against it, you use the exact same argument, and that's what kind of drove me nuts about it, and I just sort of started tuning it out just because it was, you know, if we don't put net neutrality in, or if we let them put net neutrality in, A, B, and C are going to happen. If we let them put net neutrality in, say no to net neutrality because A, B, and C will happen, and then we're going to repeal net neutrality. If you repeal net neutrality, A, B, and C will happen. It's the end of the world because A, B, and C will happen if net neutrality goes away. And I just got so sick of it because it's like most of it's based on hypotheticals.
Well, and it's not going to affect him in Australia anyway. So, but the one thing that does hit Australia, and I wanted to ask about this, is the Steam prices of games. Is insane. I even checked, I'm trying to think, one of the Assassin's Creed games, a friend of mine down under, he was like, I'd like to play it, but I don't have $220.
And yeah, right.
And so I checked, I was like, holy crap, he's right. It is $220 there. And I even double checked, you know, to make sure there wasn't like crazy differences in our currency. It literally was $120 more for him than it was for me. So, you know, we made little swapsies, and I bought the code and sent it to him. And you know, they're probably gonna come kick my door in and cuff me for that. But what's the deal with the Steam prices and the Aussie money there?
Look, to be honest, I mean, it is bad, but I'm not sure what kind of version of the game you might have been playing. It must have been some kind of collector's edition or something. I mean, most of them, the funny thing is too, and this is kind of bad saying it, but like buying them on Steam is actually cheaper than buying them in the store. I found that like the prices with the exchange rates for a normal game is probably like 70, 80 bucks, maybe 90 bucks. The places that sell games in Australia, like our versions of GameStop, whatever it's called, like they sell games for about 110, 120 bucks there. So I've always just kind of, I've never been too fussed with it just because knowing what I can get it for in like a real retail store is completely different to that. But I've always gotten keys, do you know what I mean? There's a site that sells the CD keys and it sells them for, like if I got Fallout 4, for instance, I mean, that'd be 90 bucks in the store, but buying a CD key off one of these sites, it's like 30 bucks.
Oh, yeah.
So I've never really, you know what I mean? I've always tried to buy digital copies, but then, you know, the downside to that is obviously trying to download it on Aussie internet means you've got to leave the net running the whole time to download it. Like when Doom 4 came out, not Doom 4, I guess it is Doom 4, but the download for that was like 80 gig or something, which took me 2 days to download, which people were telling me was like insanely slow. But I mean, it was either that or pay twice the price for it and get a physical copy.
Yeah, I guess.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's something that, like I said, and it doesn't really bother me that much, and not to sound like a bit of a dick now, but because I do get a lot of the games that I'm doing videos on now for free, so I'm not too fussed by it anymore. But, look, it's just another way that Aussie gamers get screwed over, man. Like, talk about gaming prices, you talk about censorship too. Like, luckily we've kind of backed off on the censorship side of things in recent years, but there was a point there when they were just, you know, censoring just dumb stuff. Like, you know, when Fallout 3 came out, I think they had to rename, what was it, Morphine to Med-X, I think it's called in the game.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, you can't have a game where people use morphine. But it's like, you're talking about a game where you can shoot someone so hard that they, like, literally explode, you know what I mean, with a shotgun. Their body parts, like, fly out in every direction. But someone taking morphine as, like, a healing item is a bad thing. It doesn't compute. Do you know what I'm saying?
I gotcha.
You know, that makes me remember something. You were playing Postal 2, and I believe that is banned in Australia, isn't it?
I'm not sure, to be honest.
I vaguely remember that being on one of those top tens about the banned games around the world. I'm not trying to get you in trouble. That occurred to me when you said that about censorship.
Yeah, it might be, because I mean, when I had it originally, I had a pirated copy that a friend gave me, and I don't know where he got it from. Like, I'm talking about when it first came out, like 2002 or something. But I bought it off Steam when, you know, Steam was sort of becoming a thing, and yeah, I don't know if it's banned. Maybe it's censored, but I remember when Duke Nukem 3D came out, and that was censored too, and you had to, like, do this, you know, command prompt thing, you know, in the installation folder or whatever on DOS, you know, to get it uncensored. I don't remember Postal 2 being, like, removed entirely. I know a couple of PS2 games were, like, Manhunt, I think, was banned in Australia. That was that Rockstar game that came out where you go around killing people with, like, paper bags and stuff. And I think one of the, not Left 4 Dead, one of the Dead Island games got banned as well, because it was just chopping up zombies, obviously. But then Dying Light got released, which came out, and that's the exact same game, basically, and that got through the censorship. So it makes no sense. It's just a bunch of retards running it, to be honest.
Yeah,
I think I found it here. In 2004, New Zealand banned Postal 2 due to gross abhorrent content, and Australia banned the game a year later due to excessive abhorrent content. So you must have got it right before the censorship police kicked in the door.
Postal was an example of people trying. Yeah, they were just trying to push envelopes. You know, not to be a name dropper, but back in the 99 to 2001, I lived and worked in Redmond, Washington, at a company called Wild Tangent, and we stole a bunch of the talent from Monolith. So I worked with some of the guys. We're at one point they started calling us Lith Tangent because we had stolen so many guys from over there. So I know some of the people that worked on Blood and Shogo and some of those things. And so, you know, seeing you gushing about, you know, I kind of wondered, you know, did I have rose-colored glasses playing these games, because, you know, I knew the guys that made them. But seeing you enjoy them in the same ways that I enjoyed them on your videos, I was like, oh, cool, all right, you know, because, you know, it's one thing when you're standing there with the guy. There's some games that I've played, you know, that I'm like, man, you know, am I grading on a curve subconsciously because I like this guy?
The funny thing, too, about Postal, to kind of, you know, about that, too, I mean, it never forces you to do any of that stuff. Like, someone showed me a video recently where you can urinate. I can swear a little bit, can't I? I can say words like piss, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to censor it. Yeah. Okay. So you can piss on a donut, and then you can go and drop the donut down, and an NPC will pick up the donut and eat it and then throw up, like, straight away, because obviously the donut's covered in piss. But, I mean, like, you never have to do that to finish the game. You can finish that whole game, I think, pretty much just, you know, not killing everyone, but certainly not, like, instigating every single encounter. And it's the same with that Grand Theft Auto series. It's like, well, the tools are there, but it's more about the person playing than it is the game itself. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's fair enough, yeah, the game gives that capacity, but it's still up to the person who's in control of it who's going to do that messed up stuff. Like, when they'd have those Grand Theft Auto videos on, like, you know, the national news, when GTA 3 came out, and because GTA 3 got banned initially, but then they brought it back out, and all they removed was the prostitutes, because, anyway. So, you know, the original footage they showed of it, of how terrible the game it was just, like, the main character, like, just gunning down people in the street, you know what I mean? Or, like, blowing up cop cars with a rocket launcher. It's like, yeah, you can do that in the game, but when do you ever have to do that to finish the game? No one plays like that 100% of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm just saying, I mean, I guess it's more up to the player than it is the fault of the game itself in a lot of ways, I think.
Yeah. I love, there was one of those news interviews with the interviewer got all angry at the guy who made Postal and was saying, I played that game and I beat someone to death with a shovel. Why would you program that in? And he replied with, we didn't make you do that. You did it yourself.
Yeah, well, exactly. I think Postal 2 you can beat without killing anybody, I think. One of those ones, they did that basically as a you know, middle finger to the critics, as like, you know, you it's only as violent as the violence you have in you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you go to every mission every day or whatever, is just like, go to here, go get your milk, go pick up your paycheck, go to the post office, go pay your fine, and then you go there. You don't have to do anything along the way. You just got to walk there. You do what you have to do, and then a bunch of psychos come in and start killing everyone. Not the player. Like, it's always like a kind of like strange, like, political group or something. And then it's like, okay, just go home now. That's the end of the day. And then you can kill them, but you don't have to. You can just run straight past them. So yeah, it's entirely up to the player.
Have you seen Postal, the movie, which I have to say is maybe the only watchable Uwe Boll film? Like,
I haven't, but I've been sent clips of it. There's a clip where I know there's the clip where the guy sticks the cat on the end of his shotgun at one point, isn't there?
I don't think so. I don't remember that. I just it just has so many, you know, ridiculous scenes. I probably, if it is, I may have forgot that. There's so many other ridiculous, like the scene where Uwe Boll says he makes his money with Nazi gold. Makes his movies with Nazi gold, and it's just like he knows, he's very self-aware of how hated he is, so he didn't try to make a video game film. He just made, if the closest thing to Grezzo the movie, because it was just like throwing all sorts of dumb things into a film, and it had nothing to do with anything. It was just offensive for no reason, and it was kind of fun to watch. By the end of it, you're like, okay, he just threw a bunch of crap at the screen, and it was somewhat watchable. It wasn't like his normal droning on terrible fake video game movies. And
I mean, I think that guy sort of became a lot more likable when he, like you said, when he embraced that fact that he just makes kind of trash. Like, I know his initial movies he thought were genuinely good films. Like, that I've seen House of the Dead, and that was pretty atrocious. And I know he got really pissed off, I think, early on in his career because no one liked his movies. I remember he did that video where he was just like, you know, I'm better than Michael Bay, I actually work hard, blah, blah, blah. And I don't think he was doing it as a joke. I think he was, like, genuinely offended. But it seems that embracing the fact that he's a bit of a schlocky filmmaker is probably the best thing he's done. You know, that Tommy Wiseau guy, same thing. Like, that guy's so likable when you see him because he's just, I think he's kind of accepting that he's just like a bit of a freak, and that's what made him kind of famous to people, maybe, you know?
Yeah. Exactly.
He's actually getting movie releases now, Wiseau is. You know, they're actually showing in theaters now.
Yeah, I still haven't seen all of The Room. I tried to watch it. I saw The Disaster Artist, you know, because I've obviously seen the clips, and then I watched that, and then I went back and tried to watch The Room, but it's really bad, man. It's not, I don't find it entertaining because of how bad it is. I still think it's just terrible.
I've been told to watch the riff tracks. Yeah, the riff tracks of it. You know, that's, I don't know if that's made it there.
A commentary.
Yeah, it's a comedy commentary with the Mystery Science Theater guys.
Over it. I'll have to check that out.
Do you like Mystery Science Theater?
I haven't watched it for ages. I saw they put them up on Netflix as well, but it's like just another thing that's added to my list, which I'll probably never get around to watching.
What are you watching on that?
Well, I was really hyped for this Altered Carbon thing that's supposed to be coming out because it just came out of nowhere. I was on, you know, Facebook, and then I saw an ad for it, and I was like, oh, this looks awesome. It's like some Ghost in the Shell Blade Runner looking thing. And then I was all sort of hyped to watch it last night, but because we're like a day ahead of the rest of the world, basically, like it's not out till today. So, but I've been watching, I kind of just finished watching Doctor Who because I've never sat down and watched all of Doctor Who. I've only watched like bits and bobs. So I sat down and I watched it from the very first sort of, you know, when they rebooted it with David Tennant. Christopher Eccleston, and I watched all those episodes. So that was like 100-something episodes of TV, man, and it was... I'm kind of burnt out at the moment, to be honest, for TV shows, so, yeah, I'm kind of just taking it easy. And I rewatched Seinfeld, like it's sort of, yeah, maybe not the most healthiest obsession, so I've got to kind of wean myself off that, I think.
I don't have time to sit down and just watch something, but I'll have it on in the background a lot, and that's, yeah, so the Doctor Who's a good one for that, that's for sure.
Yeah. Because all the episodes, like, they're not... I mean, they are connected, ultimately, from season to season, but there's all these cool little episodes where it's just, like, a self-contained story kind of thing where, like, they crash land somewhere and it's like, okay, there's, like, a weird ghost made out of, like, water that just goes around killing people and then it turns them into monsters too. And then he lands, he resolves it, and then he flies off and that's, like, the episode. So they're cool little self-contained stories, which is better than watching, like, Game of Thrones where if you miss an episode... It's like, okay, what the hell's happened? Why is this person here? Why is that person there? Like, it's not something you can just kind of put on and watch in the same regard.
Yeah, that's the whole reason I haven't started watching The Walking Dead. Made it like three episodes in, and I was like, I don't have time for this.
Yeah.
I'm getting into Black Mirror because of that. The fact that every single episode is a standalone episode.
Yeah, I've watched, nice. I think, two or three episodes of that, and I just haven't really got into it. The first episode, you know, the one where the guy, you know, fucks the pig, and I watched it, and everyone's like, oh, it's so messed up. And I watched it, and I just kept waiting for there to be some kind of resolution. Like, I'm like, okay, well, there's going to be some kind of twist at the end. And he just has sex with the pig, man, and then the episode ends, and his life is ruined. I was like, cool, that was awesome. Fantastic writing. Like,
I have not seen, is that the first season?
Yeah, it's the first episode. Like,
oh, wow.
The Prime Minister of England. I hope I'm not spoiling it for anyone, but, I mean, that's the premise for the whole episode, basically. It's just that this guy has to have sex with a pig on national camera in front of, like, a whole, you know, like, the whole country, basically, is watching. And you just keep, you expect there's going to be a resolution or some kind of message or something, and it's not just a guy has sex with a pig, and that's it.
That's some pretty deep filmmaking right there. It's very avant-garde. Yeah. We're just going to put some bestiality on TV.
Yeah, I thought maybe I just wasn't clever enough to kind of pick up on some kind of, you know, obscure theme or some kind of message that they were trying to put into it because I just didn't get it. I missed something along the way.
It was meant to be funny, you know. We're just not dialed into the London, you know. And then he has sex with pig. Oh, bestiality. Quite good.
Yeah, I think something's gone awry there because I just missed that one. But there was an episode where... some guy, you know, gets contacted by a video game company who's developed this, like, virtual reality rig. I don't know if you've seen that one, where you put this... It's basically like, you know, you put on this virtual reality thing and it's like you can't tell the difference between that and real life.
Yeah.
And I watched that episode just before, like, literally just as I got my Oculus Rift. Like, I watched that episode. And, like, obviously things don't go so well for this guy. Like, he's in this virtual reality world. And then, like, I was playing... I don't know if you've seen many VR games, but there's, like, this one called Dread Halls, where you walk around this pre-generated maze getting hunted by monsters. And I just had this episode, like, lingering in my head, and then, you know, yeah, it didn't end well. I was a bit spooked, more spooked out than I should have been, because I had that in my subconscious.
That is awesome. Since you have an Oculus Rift, I have to ask you, do you know the way?
Do I know the way? Look, I've avoided that, like, the plague, man. I've tried to steer, you know, well clear of that. That just, yeah.
Well, just looks, you know,
so
you,
stupid.
The VR chat is just, I don't know why, it's just so much fun to just go in there and it's just, there's always people running around being weird. The funniest thing is the guys doing little girl voices and then of course they switch to their man voice, you know, and after they have people talking to them, you know, and that's the, I don't know why, it cracks me up. There's so much dumb stuff going on.
Yeah, it seems to be like the Garry's Mod sort of crowd from what I've seen, almost, in a VR game, basically.
Yeah.
And it doesn't sound like a recipe for success to me.
I'm one of the lucky ones that if I'm in the gear and I'm walking, I get violently ill. I don't, for whatever reason.
And oh yeah.
I don't get seasick. I don't get air sick. But in the VR thing, I don't know. I'm one of the lucky few that turns my stomach inside out. And
I think I know what it is, and I don't know if there's any VR things that are working on this issue. But I personally have. I'm very aware of the issue. But I have one eye is just a little bit above average, and my other eye is below average. Like, if I had two of my left eye, I'd be essentially blind. But my right eye has above average vision, and that's why for me, I'm really aware of that. So I don't get sick, but I am like noticing that I can't VR necessarily well. So whenever they come out with an independent left-right eye VR thing, where you could adjust both of them, I think maybe tech you'll be able to do that. But until then, you'll just be puking in the corner.
Yeah. So, well, some of the games add teleporting, and that works some. It's pretty decent. But then I find if I'm looking around really fast, it'll do the same effect.
Yeah. Oof. I can play the teleporting games like for literally hours, and I'll be fine. Yeah, as soon as you put any fake motion into it, it can be anything. Yeah, and I'm the same. Like, I got sent this game recently from the guys who made Raw Data. I don't know if you've seen that Raw Data VR game. It's, like, probably one of the coolest VR games, I think, that's out there. It's, like, that Raw Data is where it's, like, this cyberpunk setting, and you play as, like, a ninja, or, you know, the gun clerics from, what's that Christian Bale movie?
Oh, Equilibrium? Yeah.
You can play as one of those guys. It's so badass, man. And anyway, they're bringing out this new VR game where it's, like, a racing game. And when you play it, you pull your arms up and down. You know, like you're sprinting. You basically make that movement. Mm. And they sent it to me, and they said, give it a try. And I said, look, I'm really bad at these games. I won't be able to play it. And the guy said, oh, here's a key. Just give it a try. And literally within about 5 seconds, just within sprinting like 10 meters in the game, I was going to like throw up. I was like, I just can't do it. You know, and it's like, it's basically like, imagine Wipeout. Remember that game?
Oh,
like
yeah.
The racing game? Imagine Wipeout, but it's like you're running instead. And imagine that on your head. So basically wipe out in first person, I guess. Yeah, it's just, it's catastrophic, man. I think the only solution is to be on one of those like pads where it simulates motion. You know, those things you see people using?
Yeah.
Where it like kind of shakes you to the left and it bounces. That's the only way to do it, because if there's no motion, you know, connected to what you're seeing, you know, your brain can't process it or something. I don't know, but it's vomit central, man. I don't understand people who don't get sick of it. I really don't.
So have you seen any VR games that weren't first person? In other words, like, you know, third person but still VR? I wonder if that would fix it for folks like us.
Again, like, probably not, because it's just still, like, there's everything's moving. And like I said, like, it's, yeah, you're just kind of standing still. So I don't know if that would, maybe it would. Like, I think RTS games would be kind of cool in a VR kind of perspective. You know, looking down over, like an isometric kind of viewpoint would be kind of cool, but anything, yeah, where it's spinning and moving fast is just, it's just bad news. And I don't think there's a tech way around it, like I said, until we can have our own like VR pods or something where we can just be suspended and have simulated motion, which is probably like another 30 years away, but we'll get there.
Yeah.
Something like that, like the rig in that horrible film about Assassin's Creed.
Oh, yeah, that was terrible.
Oh, gosh. Boy, what a bad way to make a movie.
I had such high hopes for that one. I don't know why I let get my hopes up.
I think the parkour stuff was good in it, where they're running around the city, because it's, you can't really mess up parkour. But yeah, the weird way they kind of interpreted the Animus was a bit strange. It's like a giant crane or something. It was a bit lame, really.
I kind of want one, though. I like the jumping around the room.
Well, you know, the sad part is, and I've said this for like 20 years, but the best video game movie is still Mortal Kombat. Like, find another video game movie that is as faithful to the game as Mortal Kombat is. Like, it's
the first...
with even Shang Tsung saying fatality, like, fatality, when like someone dies, like nothing has beaten it, you know?
Yeah, I showed my kids that. They were thrilled. They're like, wow, this really is a video game movie, you know?
It got me uncomfortably into techno for a few years, though. I'm not gonna.
Oh, that theme tune is the stuff of legends, man. That's
absolutely
amazing. Yeah,
you put that on a treadmill, you're beating your record time. That's just what I'm saying every time.
Yeah, I love the even Johnny Cage does the splits in that, I think, and punches Goro in the nuts. Like every special move, pretty much, is in there.
Yeah, it's so faithful. Although the first Tomb Raider movie. Very similar to the games. I mean, you know, it was...
Yeah. And this is funny. Like, I was chatting to someone about the new Tomb Raider movie that's coming out, and someone, you know, because that's based off the Revivals games, and someone goes to me, oh, they've just ripped off the games. I'm like, what do you think they did in the first movie, bro? Like, what do you expect them to do? It's like, it looks like that same story, obviously, where it's like her origin story and she's trapped on an island, but it's like, well, it's a video game movie. What else are they going to base it off? It just made no... That's the criticism I'm seeing from a lot of people.
The thought about when we're... You know, going back and watching No One Lives Forever, because I'd forgotten about that. I forgot her name was Archer. If they revive that game, people are going to be like, oh, they're ripping off Archer, the show.
Yeah, good point. It's a similar theme, too, with the spies in the 60s and all that kind of
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. That's, okay. That's a good point. Hopefully people can educate themselves then and figure out that she came out, you know, almost 20 years before Archer was around. Nothing against Archer, because I love that show. That's hilarious.
There's people that still complain that Warhammer's ripping off, Blizzard, with the orcs. And I'm like, 20 years before the... You're killing me.
Yeah, the recent one, too, was Wolfenstein 2, and everyone was like, oh, my God, you know, they're trying to make a political statement. It's a game about killing Nazis, and it's like, Jesus Christ, guys. Like, do your research, seriously.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if you know this, but Nazis were invented in November 2016. They never existed before then. Also, political division and political discussion never existed before this current political climate. It drives me a little bonk. I live in D.C., so I'm just drowning in the BS constantly.
Is Berkeley College in D.C.?
No, Berkeley's in California. It's on the opposite side of the country. But yeah, it's definitely the opposite side of the political spectrum from the current people in power.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you know, right. I do think Berkeley is the ultimate in the crazy too. Even here in D.C., we have so many colleges here in D.C., and none of them are as crazy as Berkeley.
It's like, called Berserkley for a reason.
Isn't that the one where they had the girl sued the college because the professors had like organized a protest where they ran in front of the 401 or the 405 and the girl, I mean, it's one of those messed up videos because they're starting a little human chain and then she sort of is going at a little bit faster clip than she should have been, and walks behind the chain and just gets bounced by a car. And
I think I've seen that. Yeah, yeah.
She survived, but she's suing the crap out of the professor because, you know, obviously they were telling these impressionable college students, like, this is a smart thing to do, to walk in front of the 405 traffic, you know.
We're kind of lucky, you know. I mean, like when I went through uni, and Australia's, we're still political to a point, but not to the extent of the stuff that's kind of going on in the US. But I was kind of lucky that when I went through uni, you know, that wasn't the climate back then. You know what I mean? The people I hung out with would just be talking about video games and movies and stuff. You know, like no one really talked about that kind of stuff. I mean, I'm sure there was a bit of it going on, but not the way it is now. And it's just like PC culture is just out of control. And I'm glad that it seems to have calmed down a bit in gaming. Cause I mean, a few years back with the whole Anita Sarkeesian thing and Gamergate, like it was just a cesspool on both sides. Like it was just disgusting, you know? And I think I can't resist making jabs every now and then in videos, but I've always tried to be kind of apolitical. And I think I can achieve that, you know, like every now and then I'll put a jab in at someone, but yeah, I think it's, like, gaming's escapism, man. Like, don't bring politics into gaming. And that's...
Right, absolutely.
That's why I play games is to just decompress after a day. You know, I'll play Assassin's Creed or, you know, some weekends I've just got to be Batman, you know? It's...
Well, and that's another props I got to give you is the fact that you can... when you make your jabs and that, or... you'll say something that's funny. Like the one thing is, if you, I'm trying to remember the line. I'll try to paraphrase it. You said if you're the kind of person that worries about what pronoun to call someone when you're introducing them, then this might not be the game for you. And
you guys said that in Grezzo, didn't I?
Yeah.
You said that in Grezzo video?
Yeah. And I thought that was so – it was so great because you weren't mean about it. You weren't like, yeah, you're effing snowflake. You were like – you're like, if this isn't for you. And that was it. That was just how you said it. And I just sort of like completely understood where you were going, and it didn't come across mean. It just came across like, you know who you are.
Yeah. I'm a pretty kind of open-minded guy in that sense. Like, I've got a sister who is, like, she identifies as, like, I guess asexual, whatever the term is. I don't want to sound like I'm being rude to her, but, like, yeah, she's one of those types who, you know, she doesn't really identify as a gender. And it's like, fine, dude, like, I'm the type of person, like, do whatever you want. I really don't care. It's a free country. Do whatever you want to do. Just don't preach to me about all your bullshit all the time or expect me to just follow you blindly and agree with your opinion. It's fine. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just one of those type of people. People can do whatever they want. Just don't drag me down and expect me to just, you know, do the same thing as you.
My personal philosophy is I will not go out of my way to try to hurt you. But, you know, by the same token, I'm trying to live my life and stay in my lane. If I'm offending you by doing that, I'm sorry. It's not intentional.
Yeah. Someone said, and I don't remember who said this, but it was a really cool quote where it was like, a lot of those people, and not naming names or whatever, but those kind of people who get offended by that kind of stuff, their philosophy is, you know, they want to get a ramp put in while we all take the stairs, except we're not allowed to take the stairs anymore. We've got to take the ramp with them. And I can't remember who said that, but I remember hearing that. And I was like, God damn, that's like so accurate. That just summed up everything for me in the terms of their mentality and how they think about stuff.
I deal with these people who are the professionally offended type, and I remember I made some quip on, it was in some Facebook group, and it was just about how the water in the Capitol Mall is, the National Mall is really dirty around the fountains and stuff, because the video was somebody letting their kids play, a whole group of people letting their kids play in the fountain of the World War II Memorial, which is incredibly, insensitive, but, you know, my comment was, hey, you know, if it makes you feel any better, the water is completely full of flesh-eating parasites, and we can't even keep our ducks alive because there's, you know, this horrible, horrible stuff in the water. And this lady got offended, and she was, but in the weirdest way, because she's going, you know, you're playing the blame game, and I'm like, it's a joke about the water being dirty. What are you upset about? Like, water is dirty and you're offended. What are you offended by? It was the weirdest thing. And then she shut up because I think maybe she like, oh yeah, what am I offended by? I'm picking a fight over this guy not, you know, saying that there's the water's dirty. And I don't know. I think like sometimes with people like that, it's like there's really no pleasing them. And obviously, you know, they're touchy. They're just touchy about random stuff.
I think. You remember when in the old games like Doom and Quake, when you used to quit and the game would say something like, are you going to be a wuss, or are you sure you want to pussy out, stuff like that. I kid you not, I remember seeing someone on Twitter once, and I still don't know to this day if this was real, but they made like a post and tagged like id Software and, you know, John Carmack and John Romero and that, and was like, yeah, someone told me to go play this game because it was really good, but I wasn't aware that I'd be shamed for wanting to not play on high difficulties or to quit, you know, out of the game and be shamed. You know what I mean? Like commenting like that kind of thing. And it was like, whoa, like, are you serious or are they just actually taking the piss? Like, you know what I mean? Like, you can't tell sometimes because the things they get upset over are so absurd.
Games are not a safe space in the 90s. It wasn't.
There was a comedian, I can't remember the comedian's name, who was talking about Twitter is where comedy goes to die. I can't remember which comedian it was, but that was a spot on thing because, you know, Twitter is just a rage factory. People go there to be angry anymore.
I love the fact that on Wolfenstein, the original, was it the original Wolfenstein or was it the original Doom, where if you highlight the easiest route, it shows the main character
in a baby. Yeah, that's Wolfenstein. It's called isn't it? Can I Play Daddy? I think it's called.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I mean, it shames you for wanting to play on the lowest level. I mean, it's just they're very brutal. And I, you know, come on, that's when real games were real. None of this infinite lives and checkpoint stuff. You know.
I was gonna rant and ask about this because like in the recent. I'm getting the name wrong. You know which one I'm talking about, though. It's basically a pay-to-win single player game.
Yeah, I saw that.
And once I figured out, holy crap, the only way I'm going to win this is by breaking in my wallet on this game that I already paid $80 for. I actually dropped the difficulty, beat the game, and called it done. You know, I was playing on some high difficulty and kept failing. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to crank this down to the lowest difficulty and just finish it. And it was just as satisfying, and I didn't break my wallet out and pay the guys.
I'm a huge cheater when it comes to games. I'm big on finding the cheat codes. Grezzo is real easy for me because, of course, I know IDDQD, IDKFA.
Let me ask you about that. I mean, how do you feel about the play to win games or any of those? That
I think a lot of the time that pay to win thing is kind of like misnomered and blown out of proportion. It's just become a system now where any microtransaction is like terrible and oh my god, this game sucks. The developers are greedy. I think more so too. I think it's a publisher choice more than a developer choice to have microtransactions. I don't think. You know, the developers are going in there saying, okay, we're going to make a game about this and this, and yeah, let's add in, you know, a jacket that you can buy for $20. I don't think it's coming from that perspective of the design phase, basically. But the only one recently that I've played where it was really bad was that Star Wars Battlefront 2. And I don't understand how people could have defended that, because you could literally spend $100 in that game and you'd get, like, you know, 100 loot crates. And these crates had, like, gear in it that was, like, objectively better than what anyone else is going to have. And you'd get unlock points, so you could unlock the Emperor or Darth Vader or whatever. Like, that's the only time I've ever really seen it rampant. Do you know what I mean? Where I've just gone, wow, that's really bad.
Gotcha.
But a lot of the time, if it's just a cosmetic thing, I don't have an issue with it all that much, to be honest. In fact, sometimes I don't mind throwing down, like, $5 or $10 just to get, like, a cool-looking gun skin or something. Like, Killing Floor 2... I think that game got a lot of, you know, flack because it had microtransactions, and it was all just weapon skins. I mean, it's not like spend $20 and you get this gun that kills every enemy quicker than this gun. Like, it's very rarely that situation. Do you know what I mean? But I think it's like almost a witch hunt now, in a sense, where like every microtransaction is just automatically a bad thing.
There's certain games where just as a reward to the developers, I'll buy that little skin upgrade or whatever, because it's like, hey, I know that goes right in their bottom line, and hopefully they'll make another one of these games that I like.
Yeah. Well, Deus Ex, the last Deus Ex game, Mankind Divided, I think it was called. They had purchasable. Praxy kits or praxis kits, whatever they're called, which were like to upgrade your skills, and I think that was done as like a means of, I don't know, maybe helping people out in the game who weren't as good at it. But everything else in the game was, you know, every other microtransaction was just, you know, buy an extra bit of ammo, buy this or that, and it's not like affecting anyone else but the person who's going to purchase it. Do you know what I mean? It's a single player game. Why does it matter if someone wants to throw down $10 and get a praxis kit or 10 praxis kits or whatever? I just don't see how that is worth marking a game down for.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
Especially on a single player. I mean, as we've said, I get about 2 hours a week to play games. If I can, you know, shave off some of the grinding time, I'll gladly do that.
I have to say, with the EA Battlefront stuff, that was such a huge controversy online, and I'm glad you weighed in on it. One of the arguments that I heard that just didn't really work for me as a kid, just obsessed with Boba Fett. And they said, oh, if you wanted to play as Boba Fett, you have to play the game for a minimum of 40 hours. And I remember thinking, well, yeah, you think you're going to walk into the Star Wars universe and be Boba Fett instantly? Come on. You know, like, so that argument I didn't really buy, because it's like the thought of being Darth Vader or being Boba Fett, I thought, yeah, you should clock in clock in a few hours. If I was told as a kid, you have to play this game for 4 hours a night for 2 weeks to get to be Boba Fett, I'd be doing my time.
Yeah. The thing too is you're not guaranteed to play as him, because even once you've unlocked him, you still need to earn enough points, you know, battle points or whatever in a match, and then there needs to be slots available to select like a villain class or whatever it's called. So even then, that was the frustrating thing. Like, I unlocked Yoda. I spent all the credits. I think it was Yoda. It's like 8,000 whatever credits, whatever it is. And then I unlocked Yoda, and then every time I had enough points to play him, I couldn't because someone else had already played him, basically.
Like, oh, wow.
So even then, that was the other frustrating thing. And that game, I just think that game was casualized, but it also punished bad players in a sense. Well, not bad players, but just people who didn't perform as good as other players. Like, it was a race to get the points to unlock and play as the best characters. So if you don't earn 8,000 battle points, whatever it costs, you can't play as Darth Vader. You can't play as Luke Skywalker because someone else has taken him. So it's like, okay, well, what can I do then? Well, you can play as like a guy with a flamethrower or some chick with a jetpack who dies just as quickly as a normal sort of character. Like, it just that whole game was just a mess in terms of that, you know, that loot crate system and just the mechanics. Like, it was a weird system the way everything worked in that. It was a train wreck. And I think some of the hatred was probably misdirected just towards the loot crates, but I think the gameplay has more problems as well that should have been directed at, you know.
Yeah. Wow. I'm just looking. I'm from the outside looking in on that one. Tech, did you ever play that game?
I played the old ones, but I have not played a ton of the modern any of those battlefields. I got burnt out on them, like we're talking.
What's
about.
Your?
Yeah, I'm just over Star Wars too. I think Star Wars has just been running to the ground. Like, it's since it's been Disneyfied, and they're just kind of milking it, and it's just become like a bit of a whore franchise. And you know, they're just ruining everything that's good about it. Like, you know, we can't even have Han Solo's backstory be, you know, we have to go and explore that. Like, why do we have to go and do that and just ruin one of the coolest characters in sci-fi just to make another $1 billion at the movies? It's just sickening, man.
Yeah, the games I like the best in the Star Wars franchise are the ones that are, you know, out of canon. The Knights of the Old Republic single-player games and what was the one? Force Unleashed. That was the last time I had a lot of fun in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah, Jedi Academy is probably the best just game just to play and kill stuff as a Jedi. I don't think anything comes close to it.
No, I haven't played that one.
Oh, you got to get it. It's awesome.
Oh, cool.
Jedi Academy.
Right. Yeah, it's like a third person perspective, and it's just you go to the Jedi Academy after the events of Return of the Jedi when Luke's like training up all the new Jedis, and you play as like a male or female. You choose a couple of different races, and you just basically do all these different missions for Jedis across the galaxy. And you talk about Boba Fett. I hope I'm not spoiling anything, but there's one mission where you're fighting Boba Fett, and he's like trying to stop you from blowing this thing up. And as you go along, every time you complete a mission, you get to upgrade a skill point. So you upgrade force jump, force speed, whatever, you know, can learn a new lightsaber style. And by the end of the game, you kick like all kinds of ass. It's so much fun. It's one of the best Jedi games for sure.
Oh, cool. That's awesome.
It's probably about $5 on Steam, too. It's really cheap.
Awesome.
I have got a YouTube question for you. Do you watch a lot of YouTube?
You mean gaming stuff or just in general?
In general. I'm just sort of curious. I heard you have a little bit of a beef with Markiplier, and I'm curious to know what that's about.
I don't have a beef with him. I think if I had a beef with him, he'd have to acknowledge me first, which there's no way he would ever do that. I don't have a beef with him. I think I'm not a fan of Let's Players, and I think they're like the lowest of the low in terms of comedic YouTubers, because it's just, to me, it's just like really fake and forced reactions. Like, the, you know, PewDiePie was kind of funny when he first did it because no one had done it at the time, and he was playing games that, like when Amnesia the Dark Descent came out, I'd never seen anyone play Amnesia and kind of react to it like I did, where people were screaming at the same thing. So that was funny. But go watch Markiplier play. He plays every game and he has to put on this kind of very forced voice and this reaction. I find it really cringy. So what was I watching the other day? Like Subnautica came out and I was obsessed with that game over the last couple of weeks. And I was just watching on YouTube that there's like a compilation video of people reacting to one of the big sea monsters in that game. And when it gets to Markiplier, he's sitting there for like a minute and he's going, oh my God, oh, what's this? Oh, I can't believe it. He just goes on for like a minute straight with this really weird voice. And it's, I don't know, I find that stupid. There's nothing clever about that, you know?
Well, I do like the memes where they've taken the reaction box of him crying and just put it over random stuff. That's pretty funny. Also, with PewDiePie, if you've ever watched him do Getting Over It, the Getting Over It playthrough, he goes completely crazy at one point and it just starts like rambling in Swedish and then saying Gorgonzola over and over again. And the editor has the words on the screen going, I'm actually worried about him. I have no clue what he's doing. And it's, he has a breakdown for like 5 solid minutes where he's just incoherent and inconsolably angry.
Can I just say too, when I played World of Warcraft, I had a troll rogue called Gorgonzola. I just wanted to add that in.
That's
all. Sorry, keep going. I had to add that in.
Yeah. So I see there's some value to their some interesting entertainment value as long as the overacting appears to be legitimate. It appears to be and I don't know.
I don't want to knock them and sound like I'm like taking, you know, heaping crap on them. Like no offense to the guys, and there's nothing wrong with watching them, but yeah, it's just not my bag, you know? And I don't watch other gaming YouTubers that much anyway, cause I don't want to like copy what other people are doing. Yeah. Like the gaming YouTubers I do watch don't really do the same type of content as me anyway. Like I like watching more of the analytical channels because I think being able to talk about something for 45 minutes is like that's a talent, man, you know, to be able to come up with stuff for that amount of time.
What's a good example of an analytical YouTuber?
I've never heard anyone pronounce this, but Rajcevic, is that how you'd say his name, you know, that guy?
No, Rajcevic.
You gotta look him up. He's he does really cool kind of analytical stuff, and he's seems to be into similar games, type of games that I'm into, like Max Payne, and he's a pretty big FPS guy. Indigo Gaming is another pretty cool dude who I've just kind of discovered recently. I kind of found him through Twitter, but it's just kind of I don't know. It's just looking at a game more than just face value, and I don't know. It's just kind of interesting. And I don't sit there watching it straight the whole time, but to kind of have it on in the background while like you're checking emails or you're looking at stuff, and then just to kind of watch it for a few minutes at a time and have it in the back of your head. Like it's cool stuff to kind of drown out to.
Yeah.
Versus Markiplier, you know, screaming at a sea shark or something in Subnautica. Like it's completely different.
or crying at an 8-bit game.
Crying.
I got into Game Grumps, which they don't even do the face cam. They're just talking, they're telling anecdotes and then occasionally having meltdowns. That one's a little less. They can't do the hyperbolic overreaction. What did you think of do you have any opinions whatsoever then on JonTron? He was one of the guys that got me into YouTube as well, and I realized that he is really more of a fashion designer than a YouTuber, since all he does is make a video like once a month or twice a year and sell t-shirts.
Right. I don't think he needs to make more than that many videos a year, because he's getting like 5 million hits a video. I think
that's absolutely
some pretty good bank. I'd be only making that many videos too if I was him. But yeah, he's a pretty funny dude. He's kind of like a more hyper AVGN to me. AVGN was like the first YouTuber I really got into. You know, he's kind of the one who inspired me to start making videos. Not because I wanted to do the same content, but AVGN was like the first person I saw who was talking about games and would bring up things that you remember hating as a kid. Like, remember when he's talking about like Karate Kid or Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? And I had that game on Nintendo. And talking about like the jellyfish in the underwater level, and it's like, yeah, I remember that. Like it's something about that kind of resonates, and I like that aspect of it where they're able to home in on things that, like, you know what I mean. We can all relate to.
Yeah.
But I find JonTron, I think he's actually like a really smart dude, but he puts on that kind of weird persona in the videos where he acts like a bit kind of, I wouldn't say dumb, but he's definitely portraying himself in a different light than what I think the guy's really like. Because when you see him on other people's videos, when he's like a guest or something and he's not doing a character, like he's a really cool dude, but I don't know how, I'm not sure I really love the JonTron character when he's, you know what I mean? Like that persona when he's doing his own videos, I find it a little bit irritating sometimes.
Yeah, it definitely, that's definitely the overacting, you know, the loud what but it's, I feel like he's great at editing and he's great at like boxing those emotions and that, and letting you know why you should be feeling those ways with some funny cutaways and that. Okay, so we covered beef with Markiplier.
Yeah, I was going to say, we kind of hit the ground running on the interview thing. So if we're...
did we start? I didn't realize we started. No, I'm just kidding.
So we can either, you know, we'll put a pre-roll at the beginning of the podcast, you know, describing who we're talking to. But if people wanted to find you, what's the places to find you?
I think we forgot one, like, huge question. I just say G-Man or GG-Man, but how do you say the name of your channel?
G-Man's fine, or just Triple G. A few people call me that on Discord, and I think Triple G is probably an easier thing. I kind of cringe when people call me by my actual name. I don't know why. Just kind of, people are like, hey, Gareth, are you going to do a review on this? It's like, whoa, let's tone that down. Because it's just funny, because I don't know the other person's, you know, real name, so it kind of wicks me out a little bit. Yeah, Triple G or G, man, that's fine, I think.
Awesome.
Yeah, my Quake name, my son added up, he's on the autism spectrum, and he's really good with numbers. He added up that my Quake name would now be able to buy alcohol in the States now. It's over 21 years old. Landing them all online, it was my old Quake name, and that, you know, later became my EverQuest and all, you know, Steam name and all that. So, yeah, it's over 21 years old, and it's like Jaminy.
My handle is GG Dogra, which was like a randomization thing. I can't remember where I did it, but back in the, remember the MSN Messenger? Did you guys ever use that? Back in the day?
Yeah.
And I can't remember how it came to, but it was like a randomization thing. It was GG Dog Ra, and then that just like stuck. It means absolutely nothing. It's complete gibberish, but it's like my Twitter handle, and it's like my username when I play online all the times. And yeah, it's a garbage name. I can't even explain the origin of it, really.
Yeah, similar story on mine. You know, first name's Daniel, but Landimal was just kind of moving the letters around and ran, you know, off by one and stuff like that. So. It's also a city in India, so I get the occasional weird spam mail.
Did we ask you what your favorite multiplayer game is? If we haven't, what's your favorite multiplayer game? Sorry.
I'm not really big on multiplayer that much anymore. Probably the one I've played the most FPS is definitely Counter-Strike 1.6, because that was when we had dial-up internet back then, but that was when we just got cable internet back then when that came out, probably like 2002 or 2001 maybe, I think. And I just played that like religiously, like almost every day. But outside of that, it's World of Warcraft is like I have to restrain myself from going back and playing it, because I know how addicted I am to it. Like when it first came out, I think it came out in 2003 maybe or 2004. Like I played it for 3 years straight, and I lost a job, a girlfriend, and I almost dropped out of uni because I would just miss days of uni because I'd stay home playing World of Warcraft.
Oh, that was me and XCOM.
Yeah, my family. Well, I had no like relationships with my parents. My parents were like ready to kick me out because Saturday night when I'm home or Friday night or whatever, I would just be raiding. Like, and I don't know if you guys ever played WoW, but getting 40 people together to do a raid in that is like serious business, man. Like you got to stand out front an area and wait for like an hour for everyone to get there. Then everyone's got to buff up, and then everyone does sound checks on vent. And it's not something you can do.
I would be Leroy Jenkins every time.
Oh, EverQuest was amazing. Yeah.
Well, if you messed up in raids, like it was, you're in like the one I look back now and I wish I had like a spine, because I used to put up with so much crap. Like I re-rolled a priest back then when I was playing it. I was playing a warrior, and the guild was like, oh, there's too many warriors in this guild. It's like, okay, so what do you want to do? Well, we need healing priest for the raids. Okay. GG Dogra, go and roll a healing priest And will help you power level to 60 or whatever, right? So you can be a priest. It's like, but I don't want to play a priest. I want to be a warrior. Nah, well, if you're not going to be a priest and you're not going to help out the guild, we'll just kick you out. You know what I mean? And it was really hard to find Aussie groups that are raiding at your time. So what did I do? I just, you know, leveled up a 60 priest just to so I could stay raiding the game. That's how addicted to it I was. Nowadays, I just go, okay, well, screw you. I'll just go play something else. I don't give a shit. You know, but yeah, it was a drug, man. That was like heroin or crack or something. You know, it was insane.
World of Warcraft was what we called it when our friends would get hooked on it. I have to say, for me, multiplayer never got better than Unreal Tournament. I loved no scoping people with the sniper rifle.
Yeah,
you just walk up to people and shoot them in the head. And their head pop off. It just
that thing
just
was brilliant. Way overpowered. Yeah.
Tech, what was your multiplayer?
I back in the day, the when they added the grappling, the mod for the grappling hook in Quake was just. I mean, we spent so much time in that, and then Quake 3 or the I think it was Quake 3 Arena. Am I mixing them in there? Fuzzy memories. It's been 20 years ago, but yeah, I mean that was my pinnacle. I mean that's when I was at my most on multiplayer.
Yeah, I went totally ADD on you too. I meant to parlay talking about YouTubers into talking about JonTron's first thing was Daikatana. That was his first review on his own channel, and he was like everybody else. He was just crapping on it. And I was so impressed with you doing a Daikatana breakdown. And you know, you were like, yeah, it's not great, but it's playable. And you actually talked about what you liked about it and what was a thing. And I honestly, have never heard anyone tell me anything good about it.
It's actually a good game, like, believe it or not. Like, and there's even a patch now that removes the teammates, so you can just play it like a normal shooting game. And it's really good. Like, it is genuinely a cool game. You know, he's like, Ramiro is a pretty clever dude in terms of his scope. Like, just a game where you can time travel to, you know, different time periods, and you've got different weapons for each thing. Like, it's a cool idea, man. And if the AI had have worked at the time, it would have been like a masterpiece. People would be talking, we'd be talking about it now, like, oh, how good was Daikatana when it came out, you know? Right. And how many games do we have now where you spend the whole time walking around with AI teammates? Like, you look at The Last of Us, the whole game, you've got Ellie kind of walking around with you, and Bioshock Infinite, you got that weird chick that looks like the Disney princess. But, you know, like, so many games have AI teammates that you play with the whole time. Like, it was so far ahead of its time. And it's got that, like, Ramiro kind of charm to it, where it's, I don't know, there's something about it, like the games that he's worked on all kind of feel the same to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, people crapped on it back then because everything was kind of the same color, like hue, and then we spend the next 15, 20 years with every game being brown.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
The problem was, I think the game starts off pretty bad. Like, having a first level in a swamp where you can't see anything, and it's raining, and you're getting, I think it's like acid rain or something, or you're definitely going through acid pools, and you're fighting frogs. Like, that's not how you should be starting a game off, man. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think the pacing is a bit off at the start, but then once you start time traveling, and you go to ancient Greece, and you take on, like, Medusa in, like, Medusa's lair, like, that's awesome, dude. That's so cool. Yeah. With a goddamn trident that shoots out, like laser blast thingies. It's, like, it's awesome.
The weapons in that one were actually really underrated.
Mm. Yeah,
Rise of the Triad was another one that had a lot of fun weapons. The most fun I ever
had
playing
watch
multiplayer was Rise of the Triad, where everybody had baseball bats and there was 14 of us, I think it was, whatever the max was for the server back in 1998. But baseball bats and those jump pads and just beating each other off the level was hilarious.
Yeah, the sound effects in that game are a classic too as well. Beating each other off.
Yeah.
I do have to say that watching your videos on your retro game reviews, they take me back to this point of nostalgia, and I'm so glad I get to talk to you with my brother, because honestly, it just reminds me of when he would, you know, let me come to work where they would have a LAN set up, and then we would all sit down and play Doom Doom's one of those games where I felt like that was the first time I'd ever done like a multiplayer game like that. And of course, like, I already loved Doom because of how freaky it was and how it creeped me out as a kid playing it at night.
Oh, the sounds in that one. Oh, I mean, gosh. You could hear the bad guys coming for you. And that was that was revolutionary.
I used to have nightmares from that game all the time. Yeah,
Doom 2, man. Doom 2, where the red sky
The one texture in that really freaked me out. I don't know what it was about, but there's like a texture in the second and third episode where it's like a goat head. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yeah.
And it's got blood coming out of its mouth. And it's only in a few areas, but for some reason that texture when I was a kid really, like, I don't know, man. It hit me on like a psychological level and just really creeped me out.
Yeah, I just
Do you ever find that your memories are HD, but then when you go back and play the games, they don't look as good as you remembered them looking? Because that's happened to me recently when I played some retro games.
I think rose-tinted glasses. I'm always like, you know what I mean. If I go back and play Doom, it's like I'm still playing it in the 90s. But yeah, because I mean, the way you play that game nowadays too, though, in like a source port, you're running it at like 1080 and 60 frames. Like it's a lot different than playing it in DOS. If anything, well, not if anything. I mean, it looks obscenely better than it used to look back then. Playing it in DOS is like, I don't know. It feels like I'm using the keyboard with like a, I don't know. I'm like bashing it with my fists instead of using my fingers. It's like the difference to me.
Yeah, I played Doom. I didn't use a mouse back when I was playing Doom.
No, I didn't either. Yeah. Used to use control to shoot and space bar to open doors. You look at that now and you just think, God, that's the most archaic control scheme.
Yeah.
What was the first game you used a mouse with? I want to say Duke Nukem 3D.
Oh. It was actually probably Quake. No, probably Quake, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah, Duke Nukem would probably be it for me, Duke Nukem 3D. Mm.
I don't remember using a mouse with that. I remember the strippers with the tassels. I don't remember using a mouse. So.
Yeah. No, but because Quake had, I remember Quake had mouse look, but I don't think it was on by default in the original game. And I remember showing it to a friend of mine who owned it, and he's like, oh, well, why aren't you using the mouse? I was like, what do you mean? He's like, why don't you use the mouse to aim? And I was like, you can do that. And that was like a revelation at the time. And then after that, like, you never really needed to in those games because it auto-aimed for you. Like, Duke 3D, someone could be up in a skyscraper and you shoot a rocket at them from the street level and it will fly up and hit them.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it was a nice touch to have it, yeah.
There was an engine reason for that in Duke because they didn't have a real Z access. The first one you were talking about mousing being required back in the Populous and Sims and Warcraft, the original, that was when I was definitely using a mouse for gaming was those.
Yeah, so when CD-ROMs came in too, I remember that. I remember my dad hooking up, like, the first CD-ROM thing we ever owned. It would have been like, remember when they were like, it says write speed on the front of them? That's how terrible they were back then. He's like, check this out. Actually, no, our CD-ROM was external, if I remember correctly. Like, it sat by itself. It was like this little box thing, and it was massive.
Probably Creative Labs.
Yeah, it was terrible. I remember that much.
Yeah, hooked in your...
But yeah, that was when, mouses were sort of, you'd be using them in every game at that point on.
I think I'm passing out.
Okay. Yeah, well, like I said, we hit the ground running. So let's do the part we should have done at the beginning at the end, and of course I'll do a pre-roll audio. What's the best places to find you online and find your stuff?
Oh yeah, well obviously like I only pretty much do the YouTube stuff, but if anyone wants to chat and all that, we have a Discord server as well, which I'm pretty active on, but I can't promise you're not going to be offended if you post on there because there's some pretty crazy people that talk on there. But everyone's into FPS games and it's a pretty cool crowd. So, yeah, if you want to reach me, that's the best way. I don't really use Steam messaging anymore because I just got spammed with friend requests of people I don't know.
Yeah.
So I don't really go on there anymore. And as soon as I start playing a game or I go online, people are like, oh, you're playing this game. What do you think of this? Are you going to review on that? And I just get kind of bombarded. So Discord's the best way, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, I love Discord. It's kind of like a slightly less anonymous 4chan.
Yeah, except you're kind of tied to your your username in a sense. So if you want to go on another server and talk about stuff, you don't really have that anonymity anymore, which kind of sucks. But yeah.
Unless some a-hole mod changes your name in that server, which I was.
You had that idea.
I was Kim K's tampon in a server. I was like, how did that happen? I didn't talk enough in the server, apparently. So anybody who was quiet would get their names changed. It was pretty funny.
Wow. Oh,
nice. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for this. It's been a pleasant trip down memory lane for part of us. And my brother got to talk U2 drama with you on the other side. So very cool.
Yeah, no worries. Good to have a chat. I always love chatting about FPS stuff. It's always good.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, it's incredible. Hey, would you mind if I put some of this interview, because, you know, obviously we're going to post it up on the podcast so it can be in our actual podcast, but
yeah.
Would you mind if I put this on, some of it on YouTube?
No, I don't mind, man. Do whatever you got to do. It's all good.
Awesome.
I'll try to retweet it and do all that kind of stuff too to get a bit of attention to it as well for you.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
I'll edit it out.